Om Shanti. This evening we have the subject of the qualifications of a great soul. And of course, all of us are studying here at the Godly World University to become great souls. So we're looking at our own qualifications. Baba has said that we should be extremely sensible and essenceful. And in the Murali today, Baba mentioned that a great soul is very particular about the words they use because they know the philosophy of language. Every word carries a feeling and a meaning and an implication, and it strikes someone's heart, someone's soul, and it can do great benefit, and quite easily it can be very harmful. And of course we must be very careful that our words are understood in the spirit with which they are spoken. Sometimes, especially the English language, there's so many versions of it that it's very easy to understand things differently from the way they are intended. So sometimes we have to ask for clarification, nothing wrong with that. I think starting off with the sensibleness of a great soul. Sensible has a number of meanings, and one of them is sensibility, where you are extremely sensitive to atmosphere and whether what you are feeling, what you are seeing, what you are doing, what you are becoming, whether all of that is lined up, or whether it is in harmony, or whether it is discordant. So to have that kind of sensibility is a very high kind of sensitivity, and that's a very good thing to have as a great soul, and is a good qualification. Sensible also means to be very down to earth and having common sense. And that is maybe not something you would normally consider as part of the qualifications of a great person, but I think that a great person is always connected with the sense of humility, and that a great person is very accessible, very easy to talk with, very easy to understand. When we are wanting to be great souls, part of that is the idea of leadership, and we hear quite a lot about leadership in some of our different programs and classes. And Baba says to us that whatever it is that we are, whatever we say, whatever we think, whatever atmosphere we put out, whatever we do, others will look at that and they will do the same thing. So we are leaders in this respect very much, that people are looking at us. Brahma Kumaras and Kumaris are very visible people because we wear white, which is highly visible, and we have our badges which look really visible on the white, and we look like we're standing for some principle. And of course what we're standing for is we stand for Baba, we're representing Baba. We stand for truth, we stand for purity, we stand for integrity. And when you present yourself like that as a statement, then obviously people will look and they will look at us probably with some sort of microscope or at least a magnifying glass so that they can see, now what kind of a person is this that we have in front of us? And probably you will also experience that because of being in this position, playing this role as representing Baba, carrying the knowledge and sowing the seeds of knowledge in different souls. So definitely people will be wanting to know whether we are for real. And of course, a great soul means someone who is for real, someone who walks their talk, someone who is not afraid to stand up for what they stand for, even if there is opposition, even if there is any kind of feeling that, well, maybe you're not what you say you are. Because why? I think everyone in the world is looking for some sort of example, some sort of role model, some kind of sample. And Baba sometimes tells us that we should consider ourselves to be samples and examples. Because when we are simply telling the knowledge, when we are simply explaining to people how they should meditate, how they should churn, how they should develop virtues and develop powers, that's okay, but they want to see a demonstration of it. They want to see, well, exactly what does this look like in the flesh? And so definitely they will be looking at each one of us. They'll be seeing us when we're on stage, but they'll be looking at us very carefully when we're off stage. And one of the things we became very aware of during the NCCC retreat, which has just finished, is that there are people with cameras and they are shooting you 24 hours a day. So you are never really off camera. So I think that a person who's very conscious that, yes, I'm here to make myself to the best of my ability as a great soul, you're always on display. And sometimes you may feel that that's a bit of pressure. But after some time, you probably get used to it, especially those of us who are all the time in the uniform. Because when you're in the uniform that Baba has given us, then you are visible, you are making a statement, you are on display, and it is reasonable for people to have considerable expectations. You may think, well, I would like to have some off time, some downtime. I would like to be able to just relax and, you know, be off camera for a while. But I think we, in a way, have to renounce that, because the people will not say, okay, well, you can have a little time off and we won't look at you and we won't consider that to be part of the example that you are. But I think a great soul needs to be able to be in every kind of possible way. You can be great while being on downtime. You can be great while being relaxed, because what is really great? Great doesn't mean that you are all the time wanting to be impressive or check whether somebody's getting impressed with you. I don't think that is great. But great is something that you accumulate over time. And it becomes a quality that you have about yourself. And I'll tell you a little story. Many of you may know this story already, but not all of you. And this is a story about Dadi Prakash Mani. And Dadi Prakash Mani is definitely, by any standards, a great soul. And someone asked her, Dadi, how do you become bara? You know, bara is the Hindi for great. But it also involves some wordplay. And bara is also the name of a very tasty kind of food that I'm sure you would have had in the last few days. And so Dadi said, well, if you want to become bara, if you want to become great, let me tell you what you have to do. So she said, well, first of all, you have to just be out in the field and baking in the sun for several months. And then, when you're good and ripe, they will cut you down, they will bash you on the stone to separate the grain from the chaff, and then they will grind you between the stones, you know, the millstones, and then when you're good and powdery, they will mix you up with cold water, and then when you're a nice texture, they will then drop you in boiling oil to fry nicely until you become good and sizzled, good and dark. And then they pull you out and they dunk you in really ice-cold water. And then when you're nice and soft from that, then they put you in yogurt and then they put some chili on top. And then you're bara. You're a great soul. So I think that it was a very beautiful story in which Dadi had described how you become dahi bara, which is really tasty, really nice, something to eat. But also, you know, when you see a great soul, you don't see all the things that they pass through, all the disciplines that they had to cultivate and sustain and maintain over a very, very long period of time, all the people's hearts that they had to win, all the people's doubts that they had to overcome, all the challenges that they had to face, all the people who they had to protect. Because when you take the position of a great soul, all of these things are part of it. And so sometimes on this path of knowledge, we describe to ourselves and to other people the benefits of Raj Yoga. You will be stress-free. That means you have to handle stress. You will be happy. That means you have to know how to be happy under very unhappy situations. You will be very empowered. That means you have to really know what the eight powers are and take the time and use all the situations that come along to actually develop the powers. Baba gives us the eight powers as a birthday gift when we come into Gyan in a little box, you know, here it is, these are your eight powers. You have a nice little picture, you know, tolerance and cooperation and power to withdraw, power to face. And you say, that's power? They say, yeah, that's power. Are you sure? Yeah, it's power. Oh, okay, that's good. You know, we were thinking something a little bigger than that. But it's not really until you actually arrive at relentless situations that you have to tolerate, you have to endure, you have to hold yourself together under different varieties of difficulties. You may have to experience some forms of violence People may not like you, people may not understand you, people may assume that you're having some motivation that you don't have at all, and they deal with you as if you have that, no matter how many ways and how much you try to explain them otherwise, they won't be convinced. And so it is under the conditions of adversity that a soul actually learns to use the powers, learns to get skilled in the application of the powers. I mean, these words are such simple words: tolerance, accommodation, cooperation, very everyday words. But it's not until we have to discover the limits that we have that we begin to understand that, yeah, I do not have that power to the extent that is required by my circumstances and my situation. Have you experienced something like this? Yeah? Anybody? Yes, a few of you. And of course, sometimes we have to consider our circumstances as similar to the gym. And when people go to the gym, it is so that they can develop endurance, so that they can increase their muscle power, so that they can have better breathing and all of this on a physical level. And they find themselves using different machines in the gym which provide an increasing amount of resistance. And in the same way, all of us are in some or another situation. I am assuming that most of us here are either living in the center. Some of you may be in charge of a center, some of you may be a national coordinator, part of the national coordinating team. You may be someone who is a right hand, someone who is very much taking responsibility in the center. You may be having to balance responsibilities at home, at work, at the center. So you are actually doing three full-time jobs at the same time. Only one of them is paid, and that too not quite enough, right? And at the same time, we have to manage personalities that normally we would not select to live with, or we would not select to work with. But as we know, Baba places us with those people who have the capability to oblige us to rise to the occasion, so that whatever is lacking within ourselves in terms of the eight powers, and of course there are more than just eight powers, but the eight powers are really, really good. And if you just work on those, then just with that, you can become a great soul. Along with powers, Baba's also given us virtues. And one of the things I've been working on a great deal in the last little while is distinguishing between virtues, values, morals, and ethics. And why should we make a distinction between those? Is because of certain very interesting elements that I only recently got to really recognize. Baba gives us a whole system that we have to apply in order to become a great soul. And one of them is the foundation of the four pillars of yoga. And the four pillars are, Brahmacharya, celibacy is one of them. Another one is Brahma Bhojan, Shuddha Anna, the pure sattvic food. And a third one is Satsang, which means good company, which means regularly participate in the Murli. And then the fourth one is the cultivation of divine virtues. Now, all of these four things come from God. The other three, values, morals, and ethics, they come from people. And so they're very different. Divine virtues, you can see if you go to the history hall in Pandapavan, on the outside of the history hall, there's a list of the 36 divine virtues which were put together some time ago. And of course, there's more than 36, but 36 is a good number. If you have 36 divine virtues, that's pretty good going. Values are different from virtues in a very specific way. For example, a value, which as I mentioned before, is created by people. When did they create it? Well, originally somewhere in the Copper Age. The values emerged when the scriptures emerged. And then as time went by, we find that the values shifted and altered and grew and shrank and changed color over time. And they vary from culture to culture. They vary from age to age. They vary from gender to gender. They vary from, you know, your attitude, what kind of a person you are. So values are very variable, rather like currency. It goes up and down according to the economies and political situation and so on. But virtues are stable. Kindness is kindness in the morning, in the evening, in the nighttime, in the daytime, in the Copper Age, in the Golden Age, in the Confluence Age, in a woman, in a man, in a BK, in a non-BK, you know. But virtues in a BK that we cultivate like flowers. Baba always shows virtues as flowers. Virtues is not a very contemporary word, you know, people like values better, but I like virtues better because they're more real and because they come from Baba. So when we cultivate virtues, we are acquiring form, we're acquiring color, we're acquiring fragrance. Values is something that people like to hear about. We have professional values, we have Christian values, Islamic values, Hindu values. They vary from nation to nation. And because of these things, they tend to be divisive. They tend to favor one set of people over another set of people. Virtues, they are across the board. And if we want to be a great soul, to my mind, I feel that we need to give a lot of attention on virtues. We, as potential great souls, what our work is, really, I think, is we have to build our stage. Baba talks about this a great deal. We need to have a good stage, we need to have a solid stage, because I mean, I think you probably notice that destruction is going along quite well. It's not over, it's a long process, but it's definitely here and it's not going away. And it's getting closer and closer to everyone. And we just have to deal with it. And one of the things that we need to do in the face of that is to be grown up. And we can't be childish. Sometimes Baba says it's very good to be childlike, but not at all good to be childish. It just doesn't look good if, you know, 65-year-olds are still playing with dollies and teddies and stuff like that. That doesn't look right. It's okay for 5-year-olds. But no, we have to be grown up in the sense that we have to know how to look after ourselves. We have to know how to build our stage and how to maintain that stage, sustain that stage, so that it's not wobbly or up and down or needing any kind of rescue. Otherwise, we would not be looking like the kind of great souls, the kind of examples that Baba is wanting us to be, and for other people to take their cue from. So building our stage, I think, involves three levels. And the deepest level of our stage, to my mind, is the five elemental qualities of the soul: purity, peace, power, love, and bliss. Our body is made of the five elements of matter: the air, earth, water, fire, and ether. That makes our body. The soul is really that point of light made up of these five elemental qualities that need to be filled to 100%. If our foundation of these five elemental qualities is solid, is full, is strong, is stable, then this is what is going to inform and substantiate the next level, which is the virtues. The virtues, all the different qualities that we talk about: virtue of generosity, virtue of sweetness, virtue of humility. You all know the list, and you can churn on each one of those and see to what extent have I develop this flower in my flower garden. And then the top level of developing the stage is the powers. The powers, the eight powers, we know very well what they are. And in addition to those eight powers, we have the power of silence. And the power of silence is a very important component for a great soul. There is a word which is forbearance. It's one of the virtues that you might have in your list. Forbearance is when you really are not provoked, surprised, upset, deranged, or put out of order by any type of situation or event or shock that could arise, you see. So the power of silence enables us to cultivate these energies, which become, in a way, you know, part of your aura, part of what you are, part of who you are. In many ways, each of us is doing our Purusharth alone. You know, this is one of the things Dadi Prakash Mani used to tell us, that eat five bananas, you know, akela. Akela means alone, and it also means a banana. So she likes these word plays. But to really understand, you know, I came alone, I move alone, I will go alone. I have to operate alone. I have to handle myself alone. And I am within the gathering. Dadi Jenghi has been reminding us of the very important point that each and every soul is unique. Each and every one is playing a part that is absolutely different from each and every other one. When we're not great souls, we sometimes think that, well, everybody's like me, or if not, they should be. But by becoming a great soul, or as you become a great soul, you give space for everyone to be exactly who they are. And you take time to be with a person to be able to appreciate all the different aspects of their character, because you cannot get away with assuming someone is what they think you are, because what you think they are is based on a very superficial look at them. And maybe you talk to them for a few minutes or do something with them for a few days, but to really, really know a soul, you have to give them time so that they can show many different facets of themselves. Because although every soul has a mind, intellect and sanskaras, everyone's mind works differently. Everyone's intellect works differently. Everyone's sanskaras are completely different to everyone else's. And on the face of it, we would say that all the BKs are completely impossible to harmonize, but yet Baba has given us this very interesting piece of homework, that seeing all the great variety harmonize with each other. So harmonizing with each other requires the virtues and the powers. And it also requires really being complete within oneself. We have to be independent of each other in the sense of non-dependent. We do not depend that another one will like us. They don't have to. Oops, fly came in. They're not obliged to like us, but never think that, oh, they don't like me. Obviously they like me. They don't have to tell you every day, oh, I love you, you're marvelous, fantastic. No, they're not required. You have to know, yes, I'm good, I'm becoming a great soul. Of course they like me. If they don't express it, or if they express that they don't like me, they'll get over it, they'll like me. Because you have to really feel that about the self. Baba likes me, so why would the other people not like me? Of course they will like me. Sooner or later, you know. And why would I not like those whom Baba likes? You see, sometimes Daddy Janki tells us, you can't dislike someone. If you dislike someone, it's a sign of arrogance, really. Dislike someone because they do not act the way you want them to, or they do not respond the way you trying to make them respond. That's not a reason. We have to really see, who am I? It's very difficult already to know who am I, and then to know who is another person. We have to give ourselves time to see them, to feel them, to listen to them, to understand them, to give them their space, you know, to understand what they want, how they want to work, what they like, what they don't like, so that we can dance with them. I think that when we're in the golden age, it was once said that the golden age interactivity is very choreographed. Like an extraordinary and beautiful dance where everybody moves around each other and with each other in such a way that the whole thing is just beautiful. But it is here in the confluence age that we are acquiring those skills and those abilities. And always we remember that, you know, Baba has chosen me. And then we also remember Baba has chosen all these other people, and they have all been chosen because a number of reasons. And one very important reason is because they are former deities from the Golden Age who have passed through many, many births and who have accumulated all kinds of situations, karmic accounts, and so on, during the course of 84 births. No one else in the world is as complicated as BKs. And that is very beautiful. But we have to give ourselves time to really feel and understand and realize who each one is, so that we can flex with them in a very successful way. Now, coming back to the actual language itself, Baba has told us, and we've also seen in the Lokic world by some of the people who have done various experiments, but you know, if you look at the morals and the values and ethics, it's telling you about what you should not do. Do not kill people, do not disturb them, do not harass people, and do not violate them, all of these things, you know. So these injunctions are given to us using actually negative terminology. And what happens in the human mind is the human mind doesn't really care whether it's positive or negative. If I will tell you, you know, do not kill someone, what you feel, what you hold in your mind is the idea of killing someone. Consciously or subconsciously, but do not kill. Do not think about a green apple. Can you not think about a green apple? You will think about a green apple. So anything that you say, any word that you use, whether you put it positive or negative, the mind will take it as a fact, as a given. And so what that means to me is that it's very much useful for us to actually realize that in the Golden Age, we actually do not use negative terminology. It doesn't exist. And so we need to develop that here in the Confluence Age, because this is the place where we acquire all of the sanskaras of the future. And so earlier today, someone was asking me, now what should we do if we have a complaint? Shall we have a complaints box? And I was saying, well, I think it's better if we have a suggestion box, because I was remembering that Baba was mentioning, do not complain, but become complete. You remember this expression? And he gives us these expressions from time to time, which are not expressions that we normally hear. We hear them only from Baba, and it means we have to churn them. And whenever we complain, what we're doing is we are seeing defects, we are seeing faults, or we are finding faults. And then when we see those faults, and what Daddy Jenki was telling us a couple of days ago, what comes in your drishti, that goes in your vritti, your attitude, and that goes in your smriti, your awareness. And then you remain aware of that negativity. So what we need to do is to discipline our sense organs, our sense perceptions, to see the specialities. And in body consciousness is such a thing that is made of vices, made of arrogance of the comparing oneself with another person. And if you compare yourself with another person, either they are worse than you or you are worse than them. And so if they are worse than you, you will amplify that by finding out exactly how they're worse than you, which somehow makes you better than them. And then you feel all right. This is a body conscious way of making yourself feel good. And the other way is you compare yourself unfavorably with someone, and then what happens is you feel bad about yourself because the other one is better than you, so then you have to find out some faults so that you don't feel quite as bad about the fact that they are actually better than you. This is the body conscious way that we have to change, because to be body conscious is not to be great. So, Baba has said, okay, do you know who you are? Well, of course, no, we don't, right? We know I am Deity Soul, I am PK, I am multi-million times fortunate, all of these things. But do you know exactly who you are? Not really, is that right? Does anybody know who they are? Anybody not know who they are? Yeah, it's impossible to know who you are. It's very, very subtle. But still, this is what Baba has said to us. Find out exactly who you are. How do you find out who you are? There's two ways. One way is you spin the cycle. And when you spin the cycle, golden, silver, copper, iron, it means, it's quite a difficult thing to do, because you have to say, okay, hum, so, so hum, I am that deity who declined and became that warrior. Who declined and became that merchant? Who declined and became that Shudra? You see, now we won't say that about ourselves, will we? We're too much ego. But by spinning the cycle in that way, we actually have to come to terms with this huge difference between what we were, what we fell down to, and then how Baba uplifted us, made us into Brahmins. And by making us into Brahmins, he made us follow principles, maryadas, niyams. You know, niyams is rules. And there's also yams is another kind of rules. So all of these things, they protect us from falling into traps. And then he gives us yantras and mantras and all these wonderful instruments so that we are actually able to become independent of the fall, the effect of the fall. And then he gave us the five forms to spin. You must be practicing sometimes the five forms. He says, okay, your first form is you are a point. The point is perfect, absolutely perfect. It's the interface between the material and the non-material world, a point. It's the only thing that can be on both sides and on the interface. Then you become a deity. A deity is perfect, absolutely perfect. Complete with all the virtues, completely non-violent, completely viceless, following all maryadas, the most highest human being. And then you become the worship worthy. Many people wonder, what is worship worthy? Should I be sort of, you know, some idol of Ganesh or Hanuman or someone like this? No, it is not like that. Worship worthy is your karmatit stage imprinted eternally in the subtle regions, which can be accessed by the devotees by the time the copper age comes, which they can invoke into their idols so that their idol is becoming living deity. They invoke your sanskaras of your karmatit stage. That is your worship-worthy form, you see. Because that is also perfect. And then your next form is Brahmin. Of course, we are not perfect Brahmins now, but we are working on it every day. We want to be a better and better and better Brahmin. Is this right? We're trying to progress all the time. So when you remember your form as a Brahmin, it is your stage of a perfect Brahman, which then naturally morphs into the avyakt stage, you see. So these five forms, each and every one of them is perfect. So once we have come to terms with our light side and our dark side through the spinning of the Swadarshan chakra, the original one, we then go to the spinning of the five forms. And then we are able to be stable in the awareness of our greatness and constantly continuing to tune Baba's Murli, to grasp the very subtle and hidden meanings that lie hidden in between the words. In so many ways, Baba's Murli is in code, because of course it has to be protected. As you know, it's out there on the internet, anyone can get it. But it's protected because the real substance of the Murli can only be extracted when it is placed in the golden vessel of a pure Brahmin's intellect, who then churns it and extracts the soul of the Murli. The soul of the Murli is the essence, the essential point, which we can then become the embodiment of during that day. And each and every day when we study the Murli, though we have studied the Sakar Murlis for the last, maybe we've studied all of them 8 times, some of us, but every time we hear it is different, because we are different, and the way that we experience the Murli makes us more like Baba. And also the way we experience the Murli depends on how we are on that day. So the Murli is a very beautiful mirror to show us where we are at. And as we churn that Murli and move that knowledge around and around in our intellect to extract that essence, and we drink that nectar, this is what feeds and sustains the quality of greatness that we are pulling little by little, day by day, pulling from Baba. Because what is the Murli? The Murli is our access to Shiv Baba's mind. He speaks through the body of Brahma Baba, who listens, who expresses what Shiv Baba is telling in the context of this world, in such a way that it's possible for us to extract that essence from that context and actually replant it in any context. So that wherever we have to do service, in any religious context, in any social context, in any political context, any kind of context, we're able to take that pure essence and make it relevant, and at the same time become the embodiment of it. Because if we are saying something which is different from what we are, then the people can't grasp it, they can't understand it. But the communication goes through really easily if you are what you say. And this is what we all are striving for. I think part of being great is being authentic, being real, being as it really is. And I think this is why Baba uses the word diamond for us. And he says, be a flawless diamond. We are such kind of diamonds that are in formation. I don't know if you know, but deep down, about maybe 10, 15 kilometers down in the Earth's crust, there are huge caverns where it is extremely hot and there is extremely high pressure, and crystals are formed in these caverns. And some of those crystals are diamonds. And in many ways, it is a very good analogy for what is happening with us, because we are like we are in a cocoon, we are underground, we are on the inside, being influenced by the fire of yoga with Baba. We are under pressure of all varieties that are happening around us, What is going on within our introverted stage? The diamond is getting, you know, formed, is getting made, and wherever there are flaws, apply heat, apply pressure, and the diamond loses its flaw. Baba, of course, we all know, was a diamond merchant, a diamond dealer, and a jeweler. He was an artist making jewelry. He designed these badges that we wear. And each of us is a diamond under construction. And those diamonds, if they have flaws, there's nothing you can do about it. The color, the cut, the transparency, all of that determines the value of the diamond. But we diamonds are constantly being under pressure, under heat, being colored, being shaped. The flaws are being squeezed out so that we become truly those that one day Baba will lift the curtain and say to the world, "See, my children, see the flower garden of virtuous people. See this extraordinary garland of beautiful jewels, and each and every one hand-picked and hand-cut, hand-formed by the jeweler, the master of the garden, and the magician." And so I think that we can really give the return to Baba of all of what he has given us, all of the time he has given us, the attention, the yogis, the senior brothers and sisters he has given us to help us, the drama, the circumstances, our brothers and sisters, every single one has helped us to become what we are today and continue to do that so that we become what we will be tomorrow when Baba finally opens up the curtain and shows us to the world. So we want to make Baba proud of us. So thank you very much. Om Shanti.